Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law School or the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Storytime Stories right after this. And let me ask you this. Now, what do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion, that's right, an abortion, arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandment model and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. 22 principles of that law. You know, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty to the law is in order to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, informative, entertaining, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. Number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, the last program here in this series on Storytime Stories, let's take a look at deeds, land law. Some years back, I was in court. And the attorney that was asking me questions, an adverse counsel that was asking me questions, and he handed me a document, and on the document, it was a printout from the county assessor's office, and it had an address on it. It was 4421 Denton Street. It was a house that I had bought when I moved to Boise, Idaho from California back in the early 1970s. I bought this house, and I remodeled that, and there was an old carriage barn out in the back. And I remodeled that, and I turned it into a three-bedroom, one-bath rental unit, plus the house was a two-bedroom. I turned it into a four-bedroom and remodeled the basement and just did a hell of a number on it. Well, I bought the house, and then I sold it. See? But this house, 4421 Denton Street, still had my name on it. And the lawyer asked me this question. He said, "Now, Mr. Gordon, how do you explain your name being on the assessor's rolls for this house at 4421 Denton Street?" And I looked at it, and there it was right in front of me. It was the assessor's printout. And there it was, George Gordon, just as big as you could, big as you can get. It's kind of like Brer Rabbit. You know, his eyeballs bugging out when Brer Fox is after. And I said, "I don't." I didn't say I couldn't explain it, which I couldn't. I said, "I don't." Now, I bought that house, and I sold it to a real estate broker named Cal Williams. Now, when I got out of court that day, I made a beeline over to Cal's place, and I said, "Hey, Cal," we went up to his office. His office was in the backyard, and I had an office back behind his house. I said, "Hey, I was in court today, Cal, and know that house on Denton Street that I sold you here three, 4 years ago?" He said, "Yeah, yeah." I said, "He just pulled up the assessor's tax roll, and my name is still on it." And Cal said, "Yep, yeah, your name is still on it." And I said, "Well, why? Why I sold you that house, you know, several years ago." I thought it was four. And he said, "Well, I didn't record the deed." And I said, What? "You didn't record the deed? Why, you're a real estate broker. Why, you know you can't do that." And he said, "Why not?" And I said, "Well, isn't there some law that requires you to record the deed?" And he said, "No." I said, "Well, I didn't know that." But I said, "Well, why wouldn't you want to record the deed? Why wouldn't you want, you know, everyone to know that you own that beautiful house on 4421 Denton?" He said, because I don't want anybody to know I own enough. And I said, but why? And he said, well, think about it. He said, when you bought that house, it was a dump, and you turned it into a jewel. Then you sold it to me, and then you charged me a king's ransom for it, and it was worth every penny. But if I went down and recorded that, the assessor would come out, take a look at that sow's ear, turned into a silk purse, and he would raise the taxes commensurate with that. And he said, did you notice that the taxes are still the same as they were 4 years ago? I said, no, I didn't know that. I said, yeah, that's right. He said, there's another reason why I don't want to record it. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that the IRS got after me and they wanted to lien my property. Well, I said, yeah. And he said, well, I don't own that house at 4421 Denton Street for all intents and purposes. Nobody knows that, do they? And I said, well, they don't, but what if somebody put a lien on me? And they said, well, what's the problem? I'm not going to sell it. And if I was getting ready to sell it, then I'd go down and record it, which would preempt the lien, because you sold it to me and it's dated before the lien was put on. I said, well, I'll be dark. So you preclude the rise in the property tax. You preclude somebody putting a lien on you. Nobody knows what you own, and you're experiencing privacy. He said, yeah, that's another little facet over there. I've got privacy. And I kind of like that. So when I left Cal's, I never said to him, well, I demand that you take my name off of that and put your name on it. After all, what difference does it make to me whose name it's in? George Gordon, Harry Finkelstein, IP Daily, Harry Wolf, what difference does it make? Cal William? But there's every reason not to record it. There's no law that requires it anywhere in America, probably in Canada, Australia. We still practice Anglo-Saxon administration. And people don't understand that. It just blows their minds, you know, when you tell them. I have not since that day. Now, that occurred back in 1983. From 1983 until today, this is 2009, I have never recorded another deed. Never. And if I live to be 110, I don't ever intend to record another deed. Now, that doesn't mean that I won't or can't or oughtn't to, but there isn't any reason for it, isn't any need for it, and why would I want to share my private business with anybody else? So what are the downsides to not recording a deed? Well, there is one. There was a case up in Alaska, and this guy bought some acreage up there. I don't know what it was, a couple hundred acres or something like that, and he didn't record the deed. Some time went by, and then the guy that sold him this land evidently knew or had heard that this guy hadn't recorded the deed. So he sold the same 200 acres to another guy. Well, the second guy went down and recorded the deed. And some time went by, and then the first guy who had bought the property comes up there, and he sees that it's being occupied by the second guy. And he says, hey, you, what are you doing on my ground? And the guy says, well, I'm not on your ground, I'm on my ground, and here's my deed. So the first guy shows the second guy his deed, which predates his deed, and he says, now get off my ground. And the second guy says, not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. Case ultimately ends up in the Alaska Supreme Court. And the Alaska Supreme Court comes down and says, well, the guy that recorded his deed with the county recorder has the highest and best evidence of title because it's recorded title. So the first guy doesn't get the 200 acres. So what does the first guy get? He gets the first right to sue the thief, the guy that sold it twice. He's never going to get the ground. But he's entitled to get his money back because the guy committed a fraud by selling the land twice. You can't do that. Now, I know somebody's going to come along and say, well, but what about selling the Brooklyn Bridge? So, you know, people are out there selling stuff, you know, that they don't own and don't have, and they shouldn't be doing that. Well, that's true. They shouldn't. And people do things that they're not supposed to do all the time. I don't deny that. And then there's crimes being committed. Yeah, I don't deny that. But that doesn't mean that I ought to go out there and record all my deeds. That's the only case that I've seen. I've been at this, you know, for, oh, hell, 25 years. It's the only case I've ever seen where there was a negative side show that showed up for not recording the deed. Now, if that bothers you in some way, well, then go down and record your deed. But in the final analysis, it isn't some law that's required. Now, I received a letter here the other day, and I've got to share with you this letter. It came from a guy that bought a piece of ground from me. And he contracted with me to buy this piece of ground. And this piece of ground hasn't been recorded in my name. I bought it on a quitclaim, so I've got the deed to it, bill of sale. And I didn't put it in my safe deposit box. You know, I don't need a third-party record keeper now. I kept this deed pretty safe. I got it over here hidden away. So this piece of ground actually was on, it's on two sides of a highway. And there's one side of the highway that's got 3 acres on it. And that 3 acres over there is about as useless as tits on a boar hog. You know what I mean? I can't put cows over there. If I fence it, it costs me a lot of money for a limited amount of pasture. I got to march my cows across a busy highway. And then on top of that, there's no water over there. So, you know, it's just a worthless piece of ground. And so the neighbor, he wanted to buy it for pasture. And I said, hell, it's a building site, so I'm going to sell it for a building site. And I sold it for more money. So I sold it to this guy on a contract for deed. He didn't have the money to pay. So I said, okay, I'll sell it to you on time for a contract on for deed. And over time, he paid it off. And one day he walked in, he says, okay, here's the balance, here's the last payment. I'll give you my deed. So I gave him a quit claim deed. Now that says Q-U-I-T, quit. I'm going to quit my claim. And I put a common law description, property description on there. So the guy took his property and some time went by and everything's going along great. And I didn't know there was a problem, see, but this neighbor now, he got to talking with some guys, he got to talking with some guys, he got to talking with some guys. You know how things go when you're talking with some guys down at the bar and people get to drinking, and you know, the drunker they get, the wilder the story gets. And so somebody must have told this guy, that guy Gordon, he's over here selling this land three or four or five times. And the guy's not lying, you know. If they said that 3 acres across the road was sold three times by George Gordon, they're not lying. I did. I sold that same piece of ground three times. Now, what nobody else said was is that I bought it back twice. See, I sold it and bought it back, sold it and bought it back, and then I sold it again. So I sold it three times. What nobody seemed to know was that I bought it back twice. Okay, I didn't tell them. Taint in the deed, taint in the contract, taint nobody's business, taint relevant to the subject matter. And then when it comes to selling the Brooklyn Bridge, that's a fraud. That's a crime. You can't sell the Brooklyn Bridge unless you've got the right title and interest in it. And has people been doing that? Sure. Sure. They're selling right titles and interests. Did I do that? No, I didn't do that. Now, I'm one of the few guys around that tells you plainly I'm a pathological liar. So if somebody says, is that the truth? Well, you know, it's up to you to believe it. You ask me plainly, I told you plainly. When somebody comes into class, I say, well, you people telling the truth or are you people liars? You know, once in a while, a guy raises his hand. I say, well, you raised your hand. You're a liar? You say, yeah, yeah. Is that the truth? Yep, that's the truth. I'm a liar. Well, this guy wrote me a letter one day, and I'm going to read you the letter as we progress along here. Let's see if we can learn something about a warranty deed and a quitclaim deed. How many kinds of deeds are there? And when you get a warranty deed, what do you get? When you get a quitclaim deed, what's that mean? Do we have to have a closing? Do we have to go to the bank? Do we have to have lawyers present and bankers? No. I've been buying and selling land for a long time. Oftentimes, I just get out of my pickup and sign it and hand it to a guy and say, there it is. It's your ground. See you later. Give me my money. Yep, land isn't sold like automobiles with titles that are recorded and registered with the state. See, the reason that goes on is because the automobile is owned by the state. Now, my land over here is also owned by the state. In fact, that land is owned by a couple other guys. And there's no clear title here in the United States. I can't speak for Canada and Australia and the rest of you guys, but here in the United States, no clear title. If there is any, I don't know where it's at. And that's why we have title insurance. That's what makes the title insurance industry flourish. Nobody has clear title to their land. Don't now. Haven't, not going to anytime soon. And that's because we didn't follow the land laws that Moses gave us. And because we don't practice land Sabbaths, don't practice jubilees, don't practice land claims, we have the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in place of the 10 commandments, and so nobody owns a piece of ground here in the United States of America. Well, I understand that, and I act accordingly. That's all. So if you ask me, hey, do you own that piece of ground? No. I don't. Who does? Well, God has first claim on it. Let me show you that. Here in the Bible. In case you were wondering, who owns all of the land on planet Earth? There's a guy that owns it. You'll find that. It's in Leviticus 25, verse 23. There is a guy that owns it. I know who it is. Here's the statute. It says, the land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for you are strangers and sojourners with me. Is there anything about that that you people are having a hard time understanding? Now, I know that you buy and sell land. I know that you pay interest and usury. I know that you don't practice the Ten Commandments. So what the hell else is new? Now, I happen to practice that statute right there. And I'm not out here selling land. That's because the creator of the universe says he owns it all. He says the heavens are his throne and the earth is his footstool. He claims that he owns it all and has never deeded, never has given one square inch of land on planet Earth to anybody. He's reserved it all for himself. Stunt. Throw that one out there. I didn't write that, so don't get mad at me. Now, there's a second entity comes along here. It's called the state of Missouri. And they claim to own that piece of ground over there. Yeah, I'm not kidding here. And the prima facie evidence of that is the property tax that I pay on it. Every year, I've got to pay $97 property tax, $96 property tax on that 40, of which I sold three. So, now, here's this guy. He buys the 3 acres of ground over here. I bought it from Everett with a quitclaim deed. Everett sold it to me, and he sold all of his right title and interest in the land to me. I turned around and sold 3 acres off to another guy. All of his right title and interest I sold to him. Now, if he wants to record that, he can. If he doesn't want to record it, he doesn't have to. That's his business life. I don't care. But he got to thinking that he needed a warranty deed. Now, a warranty deed is an insured deed. You get a warranty deed from the title insurance company, and they sell these warranty deeds. Now, let me challenge you something here. You go over here to American Jurisprudence and look up under D for deeds over here. How many different kinds of deeds are there? There are six. Six. Now, look in that six for a warranty deed, and you'll see that it's conspicuously missing. It ain't there. There's statutory deeds, fee-offment deeds, quitclaim deeds, grant deeds, but no warranty deeds. Why? Warranty deeds don't exist. A warranty deed is a virgin whore. Why is it? Well, because there's money to be made in warranty deeds. There's no money to be made in a quitclaim. So, you know, the powers that be came along and said, hey, listen, let's see if we can't make money. We bought a piece of real estate from Napoleon. And Napoleon didn't even know how big it was. So all Napoleon sold to the United States of America was all of his right, title, and interest in a piece of ground. He didn't know where it was located, how big it was, or who was living on it. And he said to Thomas Jefferson, I will quit my claim. I won't fuss with you over who owns that piece of real estate no more. Give me $15 million, and I will shut my mouth. I will quit my claim. That's what a quit claim deed is. It simply says, I'm going to shut my mouth, and I'm going to claim it no more. So Everett, who bought it on a quit claim from the Heard estate, sold it to me with a quit claim. Now, he might have got a warranty or a grant deed. I don't know how he got it from the Heard estate, but when he sold it to me, it was a quit claim deed. And so I didn't record the quit claim deed. What I need to record it for? So that Billy can come out here and reassess it? I don't need that. So some time goes by, and I sold the 3 acres, and so this guy writes me a letter, and he says, hey, I want you to give me a warranty deed because you sold that ground 2 times before, and those people might have a claim. Hell, those people have less claim than the Indians that were here 400 years ago. You don't have a problem with the guy that signed off the quitclaim. You got a problem with the Cherokee Indians who held this piece of property when Napoleon sold it to Thomas Jefferson, and he was occupying, possessing it, and using it. That's the guy you got to bitch with. Now, of course, you know, we sent those guys down the road and moved them all over to Oklahoma, but that doesn't mean that you got clear title to that ground. Now, just in case you thought that you got a piece of ground over here with clear title to it. Now, if you've got a warranty deed, what that means is you got an insured deed. There's a company called a land title company. And they sold you an insurance policy on that deed. They said, if anybody comes and claims this land, we will pay for the litigation, and if they prevail, we will pay you what you paid for this land. Now, that's what people want. They don't want a quitclaim. They want a warranty deed. Well, that's fine. That's no problem. If that's what you want, go buy it. But that isn't what I'm selling, and that isn't what I agreed to deliver to this guy. Now, in my contract for deed with this old boy, I said, now, I'm going to deliver to you, after you've paid me X number of ounces of gold, I am going to deliver to you a quitclaim deed. And he signed up and agreed to that. So we went ahead there and we paid it off. And then when he got through paying it off, I said, that's great. Oh, that's a nice clean deal. You know, guy paid me. Here's your deed. Go live your life. So he wrote me a letter. Now I'm going to read you the letter. Listen to this. I'm in receipt of your letter dated 3/19/09, sent by certified mail. I presume that the subject matter of a warranty deed versus a quitclaim deed made with a demand for a warranty deed within 30 days is the precursor to litigation. So with that in mind, let me answer in some detail so that we may isolate the core issues of any future litigation. Paragraph 1. I said, your first sentence states, quote, on December 18th, 2008, we made a full and final payment on the land that we purchased from you. And I said, I agree with you in that claim. That's true. On December 18th, 2008, those people came over and made their final payment. No argument there. Paragraph 2. Your second sentence says, quote, on January 11th, 2009, we received a quitclaim deed from you transferring all of your rights, title, and interest in said property, unquote. And I said, I agree with you in that claim. So there's no complaint. Guy paid for it on December 18th. January 11th, I gave him his quitclaim. So he's got a bill of sale. He's got a quitclaim. And George Gordon quit his claim to that 3 acres of ground. Paragraph 3. Your third sentence states, quote, but it has come to our attention that there could be undisclosed claims on that property from other parties that you sold the property to before, unquote. Here's what I said. I disagree with your conclusion, period. There are no claims recorded or unrecorded against that property deeded to you as of January the 11th, 2009. Pause. See, I did a title search. Title search. Do you know how to do a title search? That's what you're paying. You know, when you go in here and you buy a house, you're paying for a title search. You know what that means? You go down to the county recorder's office and you say, here's the piece of property, here's the property description, are there any liens on it? and they'll look it up and say, yes, there are, or no, there aren't. That's a title search. The hell more is there? Well, that's true. There's an abstract. Yeah, there's a history to the property. And the title insurance company will provide you with an abstract. An abstract. That goes back to 1914 when President Woodrow Wilson signed off to the Herds when they bought that 40 acres over there, when they proved it up on Homestead. That land patent. So from the land patent until it was finally sold to me, yeah, there's an abstract. Now, I went into Billy Hamilton. I said, hey, Billy, is there any problem here with this piece of ground? He looked at it and said, well, as of January the 11th, 2009, there were no claims recorded or unrecorded against the property deeded to you as of December 18th, 2008, when you made your final payment. There are no claims recorded against that property in the Ozark County Courthouse as of March 26, 2009, either by us, any of our suppliers, heirs, and or assigns forever. We passed to you, by way of quitclaim deed, all of our right, title, and interest in that property without any mortgages, liens, or encumbrances, save for the easements and rights of way which were made known to you and which were recorded in the plats and records of Ozark County. Okay, so I did two title searches. Did one on January the 11th. Called Billy Hamilton, said, hey, Billy. Then again in March, after I got this guy's letter, I said, well, guess I better go call. Has somebody come in here and made a claim on this land? Has some Cherokee Indian from five generations past made a claim against the Herd land patent or something? I don't know. So I checked it out, and the answer was nope, no, they hadn't. So this takes us up into paragraph four. Your fourth sentence says, quote, and that we would not be protected from such undisclosed claims with only a quitclaim deed in hand. Unquote. Now here's what I said. I said, we disagree with that conclusion. Any known but undisclosed claims against that property would constitute fraud. And the state of Missouri, under the statute of frauds, provides both civil and criminal remedies for such. However, we deny that we have defrauded you or misrepresented any material facts concerning that property. So this guy writes me a letter and says, hey, hey, I'm afraid that you don't have good title, that you're not passing good title to me. Well, hell, the time to have objected was when you sat down and you signed the contract for deed, which said that when you complete the contract, I'm going to pass to you a quitclaim deed. If you didn't want a quitclaim deed, then you should have said, I won't do this unless you give me a warranty deed, a grant deed, a fiancement deed, a statutory deed, or some other kind of deed. And then I could have said, well, okay, I'll do that. Or no, I won't. Paragraph 5. Now, your fifth sentence says, quote, therefore, we have decided that the only way for us to be protected from such undisclosed claims is to have a lawful and clear title to the property in the form of a warranty deed, unquote. So here was my answer to their paragraph 5. I said, I deny all four conclusions of your claim contained in sentence 5 as follows. Number 1, I deny that you have the power to unilaterally change the terms of the contract from delivery of a quitclaim deed to delivery of a warranty deed ex post facto. Number 2, I deny that there were any known undisclosed claims against the property as of the date of transference. 3, I deny that we agreed to deliver a warranty deed to you. And 4th, I deny that a warranty deed is the only way for you to be protected from these or any other undisclosed claims. Now, nobody has made a claim. I don't expect anybody to make a claim on the land, and the guy wants me to guarantee it. And I'm sitting here saying, huh? God Almighty prohibits me from buying, selling, and trading land. The state claims to own the land. All I can transfer is my right, title, and interest. And this guy says he wants me to sell him the rock, the mineral, and the dirt. And furthermore, he wants me to sell it to him ex post facto. Furthermore, he wants me to sell it to him. I never agreed to sell him a warranty deed. Huh? What the hell is this all about? Now, ignorance comes up from time to time, and, you know, I understand that. But why don't we educate ourselves so that we know what the hell we're talking about? Huh? Now, let me give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that now can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by simply calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use in this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing or recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Just keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. All right, we're going to talk about land law deeds, such as fiaffment deeds. That's a type of deed. Grant deeds, a type of deed. Warranty deed. Now, warranty deed's kind of a hybrid. They don't really exist. A warranty deed is like a virgin whore. And it's something to talk about and jawbone over, but it's not something that really exists, although we buy them, sell them, and trade them every day. They're a legal fiction. They make a lot of money. That's their purpose. They do exist. They're not part of the literature, the nomenclature, but they're bought, sold, and traded daily, and they have a purpose. They limit your liability in case there's a claim made against the deed or against the title to your property. Now, to show you how often this occurs, the title insurance companies pay off on a bad deed, on a claim on a title, about 1 in 1,000,000 cases. So they charge you $100. And they charge 1,000,000 people $100, and they take in $100 million in about 1 out of those 1,000,000 claims. That's not necessarily a $1 million deed either. That's a $50,000 deed they pay off on. It is such a lucrative business. It is so profitable. It is the single most profitable insurance business in the world. It's title insurance. That's how valuable title insurance is. Now, I wouldn't waste my time. I could only quote one case where a guy needed title insurance, and that was that Alaska case. And then what he did was he sued the guy that sold it twice and collected his money back. So, you know, what the hell is the problem? But if he'd had title insurance, the title insurance company would have paid off, and they would have sued the guy. So I went on in the letter here because I'm going to explain to this guy what this title insurance is. I want to do that for everybody out there because I had two or three of these guys. They said, that guy Gordon is a lying thief, and he's out here selling land he doesn't own. And that's not true. I never sold a piece of ground I didn't own. And he's a fraud. That's not true either. I never defrauded anybody out of a nickel. Well, not after I quit practicing communism. I used to be a full-time thief, but a full-time liar, but I quit doing that. But, you know, I'm not running around telling you, believe me, I didn't ask this guy to do that. He said he wanted to buy the ground. I said, I want to sell it. And I said, I want to give you a quitclaim deed, and he agreed to it, and that's the end of the argument. And if you want a warranty deed, you can get one. You got to go buy it. I'm not going to issue a warranty deed. I'm not going to issue title insurance. I'm not going into competition with the title insurance companies. Little Georgie Gordon's not involved in that. Doesn't want to be. Isn't going to get involved. So in paragraph 2, I said this. I said, in paragraph 2, you state that, quote, we believe that we will suffer the following damages if we don't receive a warranty deed to the said property. They thought they're going to lose the gold used to purchase the property. They're going to lose the money used to improve the property. They're going to lose the money they put into the sewer, power, and water. They're going to lose their loss of labor to improve the property, that they were going to have a loss of money to move here from Montana to the property, and that they're going to have a loss of value, time, and energy dealing with this whole enterprise. Now, I want to point out to you that so far nobody's gone over and said jack diddly squat to them. Nobody said boo. They bought it. They're in possession of it. They got a deed, and they got a bill of sale. If they want to go file it, they can go do that too. Nobody stop them. So I came back and I said, I deny that I ever agreed to deliver more than a quitclaim deed for the consideration tendered for the property delivered. And I cannot agree or disagree with your beliefs or state of mind. Life is full of risks. And I did not agree to deliver a risk-free state of mind to you. Boys and girls, when you buy something, it's now yours. Can you understand that? When you buy a piece of property, okay, now it's yours. Now what do you want to do? Oh, I want to go down and get title insurance on them. Okay, go do that. Hey, I want to go down here and put in a trailer park. Well, fine, go do that. In paragraph 3, you state that, therefore, we give you the opportunity to make a good faith response to this letter by providing us with a warranty deed to the said property within 30 days of receiving this demand. Here's my answer to that. I said, I deny that I agreed to deliver a warranty deed to you for the consideration tendered, and I refuse your demand for a warranty deed. And so what I said was, kiss off, I ain't doing it. Doesn't need to be any plainer than that. All right. Now, remember, the guy sent me a letter. Litigation is what I have to expect. Now, if you want to sue me, anybody can sue me. Do you understand that? There is nothing in life that prevents you from ever being sued. There is no guarantee that that's ever going to happen. I haven't been sued very many times, but, you know, if you want to sue me, get after it. I'll answer. And then if this guy wants to sue me, I'll answer. Now, I made an agreement, and I fulfilled my end of the agreement. When I come into court, I'm going to testify to those facts. Here's the deed. Here's the contract. Here's what I delivered. Here's what he paid. See, I'm not complaining that he's defaulted. He's sitting there writing me a demand letter. He's never alleged that I defaulted. He said, I want you now, ex post facto, to give me a warranty deed. Now, you're probably sitting there saying, well, what the hell's the matter with you, Gordon? Why don't you just give the guy what he's asking for? Because a warranty deed is a criminal activity. That's why. And I'm not going to participate in his criminal act. Now, understand this. I am not opposed to crime. If people want to go out and break the law, that's fine, but leave me out. Don't bring me into your criminal behavior. And this guy over here is saying, well, I want to get a warranty deed. You see, I want to violate Leviticus 25:23, and I want you to be a co-conspirator with me in the violation of that law. And I'm just simply telling you people, kiss off. Now, here's some more. Now, with that said, kiss off. You may now move forward with litigation on the issues tendered by our response to your demands. So I'm presuming that the guy's making a legal demand upon me, and so I've answered all of his questions. I said yes to this, no to that. He said do this, and I said no, I'm not going to. Now they're set right out in spades. Now write your complaint, and let's go litigate. Now, as to the opportunity to make a good faith response to your letter, now let me do that. Now here's my response to his letter. Here's my response to his request for a warranty deed. Now, it is not an accident or through malicious intent that we have refused to deliver a warranty deed to you for the property in question, but rather it is a rule of law. It is against the law to deal in warranty deeds, and we refuse to participate in this kind of criminal activity. But we are not trying to prevent you from doing so, or we're not trying to persuade you not to engage in this kind of criminal enterprise, such as a warranty deed. That's a decision that you'll have to make for yourselves. Our choice has been to withhold our foot from this evil. So I began my analysis of warranty deeds with Bouvier's 1914 Law Dictionary under both deeds and warranty, but not warranty deeds, which tells us a good deal. You see, a warranty deed is an oxymoron, like a virgin whore. It does not exist. However, I did find six kinds of deeds. And just what is a deed? A deed is a written instrument under seal containing a contract or agreement which has been delivered by the party to be bound and has been accepted by the obligee or the covenantee. And here are the types. There are six. 1. Deeds of feoffment. 2. Deeds of grant. 3. Deeds of indenture. 4. Deeds of release or of quit claim. 5. Deeds of poll. 6. Deeds under the statute of uses. Conspicuously missing are warranty deeds, and for good reason. For example, a warranty is an insurance or surety. For example, warranty in insurance. A stipulation or agreement on the part of the insured party in the nature of a condition. And a surety under suretyship is an undertaking to answer for the debt, default, or the miscarriage of another by which the surety becomes bound as the principal or original debtor is bound. So a warranty deed is an insured deed. It's an insurance policy on a deed. It is title insurance. Thus, if you want a warranty deed, you go to the title insurance company, pay a premium, and they'll issue you a title insurance policy or insured the deed. That's called limited liability. Now, a warranty deed is a fiction of law. For example, it simply doesn't exist. But still, there are, and they are as common as pig tracks in a barnyard. And why is that? Well, with the aforementioned six deeds, there's no money to be made. That is, there's no money to be made once the land has been sold. So in order to make money, we need to have a product that we can sell. So we can insure deeds, and then we can charge premiums for the insurance on the deed. This would give us a new product that we'll call a warranty deed. And what is the benefit of this new product? Well, if a claim is made on the insured property, the title insurance company will handle the litigation, and if they lose, they will indemnify the policyholder to the limits of the policy, which is usually the amount of the mortgage. So what you're asking us to do here is to give you a warranty deed and then insure you against any potential liability. Then you want us to defend the case, and then you want us to pay you the full insured amount, and you want all of this without paying any premium. Well, we refuse to furnish you with the warranty deed on the grounds that it's a no-brainer. And also, surety is prohibited in Scripture. It's prohibited in Proverbs 6, verses 1 through 15, Proverbs 11, 15, and Proverbs 17, 18. And insurance is limited liability, which violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. However, there is one more reason that we will not give you a warranty deed. For example, it's against the law to sell land. In Leviticus 25, verse 23, the statute reads, "And the land shall not be sold forever, for the land is mine, for your strangers and sojourners with me." Now, a warranty deed purports to sell, transfer, give, grant, and convey the land itself to the buyer, and then guarantee the title to that said land. That is impossible. Nobody on this planet owns one square foot of land, nor can he, by operation of law. There is one entity that claims ownership of land, and that's the state. And the state not only claims that it owns the land, they also impose rent in the form of a property tax. This creates a contested issue of fact as to who actually owns this property in question, God or the state of Missouri. But we, the Gordons, have never claimed to own this land at any time, to any person. And both of you attended school here. And we told you in class over and over again that there is no good title to land in the United States of America because land titles were never sized from the Indians. The United States bought the land in question in the Louisiana Purchase for $15 million from France by way of quitclaim. Napoleon quit his claim to the land in favor of the United States. The United States then patented the land to the first homesteader, who then sold it to the Hurds, who then sold it to the Chisholms, who then sold it to us, who then sold it to you. Now, the United States Corporation claimed that they owned that land, the land itself, the land, the mineral, the rock, the earth, and they gave it to the first homesteader by land patent. So I'm going to leave you to decide whether the United States Corporation actually owned that land itself or just a property right in the land. However, Leviticus 25, verse 23 is a direct quick claim against that land, and we do not want to challenge that claim. Nobody else has a claim to that land. But if somebody does make that claim, that's your time to defend your interest. Now, the highest and best title to land is use, occupation, and possession. That's the common law title to land, use, occupation, and possession. That is a common law land title, and the best evidence to the use, occupation, and possession of land is the property tax receipts which I hold. Nobody else had a better claim to that land in question than we did. So if you want a warranty deed, you'll need to go into the title company, pay them the insurance premium, and then they will issue you a warranty deed. However, we will not do so. That's my position. And I thought I'd share that story with you, not so much because I'm so smart, but because there's a lot of ignorance that runs around out there under the guise of scholarship. Now, the only kind of deed known to the mind of man in the United States of America is a warranty deed. I was in the real estate business for many years. I was in the contracting business. I don't know how many pieces of property I've bought, sold, and traded. I can't tell you how many closings I've been to. But it's dozens. Maybe even, I wouldn't say a hundreds or, you know, 100, but 24, 36, or 48, yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I never saw anything in any of those closings in all of my business career but a warranty deed. I never heard of a quick claim deed. I didn't know what a grant deed was until many years later. Now, after I talked to my old buddy Cal Williams, and he explained to me about deeds, I got my education from an old-timey real estate broker who didn't record his deeds. That's where I learned Cal Williams. God love him. Now, in school, I passed that on to others. I'm not here to tell you you shouldn't have a warranty deed. I don't care. But I'm not going to deal with them. And I'm not going to have some guy come along and threaten me or try to browbeat me and send me a letter and say I'm a thief and a fraud and I could be selling that land six times to six other people, folks. If that happens, then if somebody comes out and makes a claim, then you ought to run right into Tom Klein and tell him, hey, Tom, that guy Gordon sold this piece of ground twice, and I'm coming up on the short end of it. That's a criminal fraud, and I want him prosecuted. I think old Tom would do it for you. I don't think old Tom has any love lost for George Gordon. Now, as I tell my students, you know, it's incumbent upon all of us to obey all the laws of the United States, all the laws of the state of Missouri, and all the laws of God, and to do all of them simultaneously. And if there's a conflict between the law of the United States and the law of Missouri, it should be settled in favor of the United States. If there's any question concerning law and any controversy of law between God Almighty and the state of Missouri or the United States, that controversy should be resolved in favor of the creator of the universe without question. And that's what our United States Supreme Court said in Seeger versus United States. That's what Blackstone's commentaries tell you. That's what the Congress of the United States tells us in Public Law 97-280. That's what the President of the United States said when he signed Public Law 97-280 into law. Everybody's in agreement here, kids. Nobody's out of step. The law of God supersedes the law of the United States. It supersedes the law of Ozark County, Missouri. Although I was in court one day, and I brought the subject up, Public Law 97-280, And John Jacobs, our local judge, said that's not the law of the United States. And I said, I beg to differ, and let's go litigate it, John, and we'll take it up and we'll see whether the appellate court agrees that the law of Ozark County supersedes the law of God or not. Does it supersede the law of the United States? You know, if you people want to know which law supersedes which law, that was well settled at Appomattox Courthouse. When you're talking about states' rights here, kids, we settled that at the end of the Civil War. It's a done deal. You can sit there and argue about states' rights until you're blue in the face. But when push comes to shove, it'll be the 101st Airborne sent out by the president. They'll settle the squabble once and for all, just like they did at Central High in Little Rock, 1956. Now, if you want to give them some lip, you know, get after it, but I think you're wasting your time. Now, I'm not in opposition here to the laws of the United States or the laws of Missouri, but when those laws violate the law of God, well, then I got to go into the lion's den or into the fiery furnace. I mean, that's the duty that our Creator lays upon us. Now, this is fairly simple. When somebody wants you to violate a law that's relatively easy, you know, like land law, like, you know, Leviticus 25:23, you know, you don't have to lay your life down. You're not going to get burned at the stake. You know, nobody's going to throw you in the penitentiary for the rest of your life. Come on. But by the same token, you ought not to allow people to browbeat you and to threaten you and intimidate you into violating the law of God, even the small laws, even the little ones. You know, Jesus made an observation one time in Matthew 5:17. You ever read that in Matthew 5:17? He said, this little statute over here, he said, this little law, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men, so he shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them shall be called great in the kingdom. I suggest that we practice all of these least commandments. They're not bad. And in fact, like this land law, I think they're even good for us. Well, with that said, I'm out of time again, so let me give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. And we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.